Washington has more actors than Hollywood these days. That is, people in acting executive positions because no one's been confirmed. Knowing that you're not going to get the big job in the title minus that word acting doesn't mean you're less committed to the job than the eventual chosen one. That's according to Ann Joseph O'Connell, a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley, writing for the Brookings Institution. Professor O'Connell, good to have you on.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So it is conventional wisdom, I think it's fair to say, that with your acting, you're just kind of treading water and waiting till this person the administration really wants to come in and do the job. You're not so certain about that assertion, are you?
That's right. The head of the Partnership for Public Service recently termed acting officials substitute teachers, lacking a requisite authority in the agencies. And I'm working on a book project now on temporary leaders in government and in business. And in both the public and private sectors, these interim leaders can be quite effective. We saw this in the Obama administration. President Obama actually made fewer nominations for top federal agency jobs, relied more heavily on acting officials. And some of those officials led some pretty big actions. For example, Vinita Gupta headed the Civil Rights Division in the Department of Justice as an acting official. And under her leadership, there was guidance with regard to transgender students, for example.
So for the administration, whichever one it might be, then the importance of the acting to them is getting the job done, the policy carried out, regardless of what the title of the person is.
That's right. And sometimes that policy is partisan in nature. And so having a career agency official in the new administration, there might be more conflict. But a lot of what these federal agencies are doing are not partisan in nature. It's sort of doing the job, the functions of government, and having an acting official drawn particularly from the career ranks with great experience in the agency may in fact make it easier to get those functions completed.
So as an acting, you might have, say, a cabinet secretary over you, but you might be the acting deputy or the acting program manager, whatever it might be, that where there is a availability of a appointed position. So what's a good relationship? What's a good way for the appointed person or the SES, on the other hand, to interact with someone who finds themselves in an appointed position? For example, suppose you're the confirmed secretary, but you've got an acting deputy. What's the best way to establish a good relationship there?
I think the best way to establish a good relationship would be the same in that context as it would be if there were a deputy secretary who had been confirmed, because the secretaries don't have full control over those lower level confirmed officials, just like they don't have full control over who the actings are going to be. And so definitely learning, particularly from the senior careerists about the agency, making sure that the acting officials below them understand the new administration's priorities and what they can and cannot do will all help to make the agency function. And sometimes we have an acting at the very top. I mean, until the last cabinet secretary got confirmed late last week, we had an acting secretary of labor, and he had nearly four decades of experience in the agency. So you sort of had an acting on the top and many actings underneath.
And if you become an acting, how does your relationship change with people that had been your peers or maybe other SES people? Because as acting, you do have more authority. You might be a substitute teacher or whatever, but you still have the authority that is greater than you might have had before.
Right. I think there's two dimensions to consider for the acting official, both while they're acting, sort of how to manage those new relationships, because they may now have authority that they didn't have before. They're in a hierarchy where they may have been in a horizontal power relationship before. And so managing that is going to be important. But a second dimension is once they stop being acting, they kind of go back to their old job and then kind of managing those positions. And we see this in other sectors. We have in the education sector, for example, a colleague of mine steps up and becomes interim dean of the law school, but then returns after a permanent dean is appointed to the faculty. And so both the colleagues and the person who's been interim has to then manage in the post-acting setting as well.
So make your bed carefully because you're going to be sleeping in it again, once again, eventually. We're speaking with Ann Joseph O'Connell, a law professor at the University of California at Berkeley. Now, you've written a history almost of the appointment process and pace dating back from the beginning of the Reagan administration all the way through the end of the Obama administration. What are your big findings?
So I think there are several major findings. The first is that many nominations, or a surprising number of nominations, don't succeed. That doesn't mean they're voted down. It means mostly that they're returned to the president when Congress goes on a long enough recess, or in a small number of cases, they're withdrawn by the president. Now, some of those failed nominations are resubmitted the next year and do get confirmed. But if you're looking at nominations that get submitted, how many get returned or withdrawn by the president? Over 1 in 5 nominations to federal agencies fails in the 1981 to 2016 period, and it's increasing over time. So while Bush Sr. had an extremely low relative to the other presidents in the data, a failure rate, President Obama saw 30% of his agency nominations get returned to him by the Senate or that he withdrew. A second major finding is about how long it takes successful nominations to get confirmed. So President Reagan, President Bush the first, it took about 2 months for a submitted nomination to get confirmed. For President Clinton and for President George W. Bush, it took about 3 months for a successful nomination to get confirmed. But for President Obama, it took about 4 months. So you see these increasing confirmation times. A third major finding is that the change to the Senate rules in November 2013, where the Democrats basically ended the potential for a filibuster on agency nominations, didn't make it much better for the year after, when the Democrats still controlled the Senate. So although in 2014, the number of agency nominations, or the percentage, I should say, of agency nominations that failed decreased, right? More agency nominations in percentage terms got through in that year when the Democrats still controlled the Senate. Confirmation delays increased. In the final 2 years of President Obama's administration, we see the highest failure rates of any of these presidents and the longest confirmation delays.
So it sounds like, given your other finding that about 20% of jobs seem to always go unfilled, that you really need to get a lot of nominees in there to have your percentage go through so that you have a pretty full roster. It's almost like the difference between a batter's batting average and their so-called BABER, which is the percentage of balls in play.
That's right. But what's interesting about the end of President Obama's administration is that he submitted significantly fewer nominations than any of those other presidents, and he still had an incredibly high relative to his predecessors' failure rate.
So that's the other variable, then. It's not just sheer numbers, but the people you're putting in and something you can't control, which is the makeup of the various Senate committees.
That's right.
And while we have you, your assessment of the first 100 days just concluded a short time ago. What's your major finding there?
President Trump is behind in filling federal agencies, but I don't think he's as far behind as the prevalent media accounts may suggest. His numbers at the 100-day mark don't look that different from the numbers of President George W. Bush, who got off, admittedly, to a slow start. Several things to keep in mind. Number one, the 100-day mark is artificial. It actually turns out that President George W. Bush had over 60 nominations that posted on the 101st day in the Senate. So his numbers, if you look just at the first 100 days, look quite low. But that President Trump, according to a recent Washington Post article, though the article was lamenting the slow pace, at the end, there's a statement from the administration that says that 250 nominees have been approved by the White House and are undergoing vetting by the Office of Government Ethics, for example. That's a huge number of agency appointees. And if most of those get through the vetting process, his numbers are going to look a lot better in upcoming months. The last thing I'll say is that the political environment and the 2013 rules change favors President Trump. Number one, he has a Republican majority in the Senate. Number two, he doesn't need 60 votes for these agency nominations. He just needs a bare majority for them to get to the confirmation vote. And so I think that by the August recess, the numbers are not going to look as dire as these recent media accounts suggest.
And Joseph O'Connell is a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley. Thanks so much. I guess we'll have to really watch and see how things play in the weeks ahead, and maybe not so much in that first 100 days. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
We'll post a link to her articles at Brookings and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.